And tonight it's my great pleasure to welcome to the studio for the Ultima Thule audience, Mr. Yaroslav Kovaracek, who was famous and quite influential for his benchmark program Dreamtime, which went to air on ABC FM from the mid-80s all the way until the early 90s. Almost a decade of music, actually, was presented via Dreamtime. Welcome, Yaroslav.
Thank you very much, Mark. It's a great pleasure to be here in your studio with your listeners.
Thank you. It's a great honor to have you here. Something I often wondered, because you were quite influential in bringing me and introducing me when I was growing up to the ambient music sound. And in the years since then, as my musical appreciation has developed, I began to wonder, who were your mentors and who were the greater influences on you as you were growing up, especially in the realm of ambient music?
Well, I think I was very lucky. I was born in Bohemia. In Bohemia, I used to be part of Austro-Hungarian Empire, then of Czechoslovakia, now of the Czech Republic. It's right in the heart of Europe. Prague is the capital. And in this country, we had very rich musical traditions. Now, I also was born into a musical family. My father was a musician, my mother and my grandmother as well. They used to sing quite well. So I was surrounded by music from my earliest childhood. Music simply has always been a very important part of my life. And if you talk about ambient music, well, it all depends how we define ambient music.
Yeah, so how would you define, if you could, ambient music?
I would say it's actually sonic space or sonic environment around us. We can define it from the point of composers. Say this is a certain kind of music which creates this sonic environment. We can also define it from the point of a listener. And then actually it depends on the way you listen. And then you would find that even going through the forest or having a walk on the beach, all those sounds around can be actually perceived as ambient music.
Yeah, well, and those sounds which we find ourselves out there in the natural world, we're going to touch on that a little bit later when we talk about some of your field recordings.
Actually, I just remember there's one little story or one little aspect of my childhood with my father. My father also played the violin among some other instruments, but once he lost the tip of his index finger, so keeping in tune was not always easy, yet he was very keen on playing, and once he brought home harmonium, and our dog would sit with us and would sing. But neighbor was complaining about our music making, so my father would often take his motorbike and we would go high in the mountains. And there we would have this little harmonium, his violin.
So he would take you with him?
Oh, yes, yes. And I said, well, what are we going to play? So just listen to the birds, listen to sounds, and we'll join in. And that's how we used to play. Well, to me, without knowing it, perhaps this was really experience of a lovely ambient music being created.
Absolutely. It sounds quite atmospheric, and the dimension of interacting with nature, with the music, is also something which I'm sure some of our contemporary ambient music connoisseurs can appreciate, how the natural world and the musical world are often quite interwoven with ambient music. Wow, that's a wonderful story. Now, I understand that you studied musicology. Would you mind telling us a little bit about how you came from studying musicology to actually being the presenter of this benchmark program, which I believe was almost the oldest program of its kind by a few months in the whole world?
Yes, only the music from the heart of space managed to beat me by, I think, 3 or 4 months. That was really first, as far as we know, a program of ambient or relaxation music. And then Dreamtime started. Well, musicology. It's also translated as the science of music or history of music. So if you study musicology, you're not really a practicing musician, but you do all that business around music. So some musicologists may be musical critics or music historians, librarians, all sorts of applications in practical life where we have to deal with music. My specialization was music and mass media, but I was actually trained in production of television programs and films, musical films, which was a really wonderful profession, because if you do a film, you use the visual side with music, that gives you great freedom. Most films or TV series, whatever, just follow the story. But if you have music, you know, you can really use your fantasy and you can enhance the music, the visual language.
Absolutely. And, yeah. And our audience, our long-standing audience members who are familiar with the founder of Ultima Thule, George Cruikshank's programs, will no doubt be aware that he's quite fond of film scores and soundtracks to films. He actually includes a lot of that because the music itself is often quite evocative and ambient and richly textured in that sense, while still being etheric enough and undefined enough to allow the listener to actually develop some of their own interpretation and journey with the music. So, yeah, I hear what you're saying.
I'm not suggesting that a film or television, a visual part should be describing music. No, it can have its own freedom. But it's a very interesting marriage between vision and sound, where, particularly in music films, of course, music plays the dominant role. Music's the really leading part in it. I left Czechoslovakia in 1968, because what happened in those days, it still was part of the Soviet bloc, and there was a communist regime. But in the mid-60s, we tried to get away from it, but the people in the Kremlin, they realized what we were after. So overnight, we had 500,000 soldiers in our country, and I didn't like that, so I escaped. And eventually, I landed in Australia. And as things here are somewhat different, instead of television, I got into radio, which I didn't mind, and I don't mind at all, because radio is a wonderful medium. It's very intimate. It gives you more freedom. You can be more creative. So, no, I actually loved radio. And in 1975, I was invited to join the team, which went to Adelaide. I used to live in Sydney. I came to Sydney in 1968, but in 75, I went with others to Adelaide, where ABC FM started. So what I did, I of course helped to produce various programs, but it was the first director of ABC FM, Chris Simons, who asked me just to do a voice test. Now my English, then I was pretty miserable because I didn't speak English at all when I came to Australia. But he said, no, look, it's about time that our listeners will hear someone with an accent. So he convinced me that I should actually do some presenting as well. It was a big challenge, I have to say. But then I liked music, and for me, sharing great music with other people, that was a great challenge and something very enjoyable. Now, you asked about Dreamtime.
Yes.
Practically all my programs, I would always think, you know, that I'm not just doing my sort of ego tripping and my personal journey. I was pretty aware that sitting in the studio and preparing the program, I'm going to share something very nice and very special with my listeners. So I would always think who those listeners were, what kind of music they would need in any particular time. You see, I would never play a Mahler symphony at lunchtime, because that would be ridiculous. Now, it's not the time to listen to this demanding music. And I was also doing Midnight to Dawn programs. I didn't mind at all, because I from my student days, I was basically a night person, so for me, going through the night was not that difficult. So I knew that after midnight, that was a very good time for chamber music and more demanding music, because there were listeners. There are listeners through the night. And that was a time where they could concentrate and truly listen. But then about half past four, I knew that, especially some older people, they would wake up so early. So what do they need is music full of energy to start a day. So then I would go to Baroque music, and I would play, apart from Bach, of course, Vivaldi and that kind of music, or early classical music, just to start a day with fresh energy. The question was what to do between, let's say, 3 and 4. And great thing about radio is that, you know, you get feedback. One would get letters. Sometimes people would ring you if you do it live in the studio. So I was trying to create the image of my audience and what the needs may be. And I realized that there was quite a number of people who were ill, they were in hospital. Sometimes they couldn't sleep. So I thought, well, why should I play any noisy music or challenging music? 3 and 4, it's a very quiet time of the night. So I was choosing very slow music. And it didn't take long, and I was getting very good response. There were people who said, well, that really helps us very much. Because here we are, I can't sleep, and this music is soothing. It's got great power.
Fantastic. So just putting this in context of time frame, this was the mid-70s?
Yes. I would say maybe early 80s.
Okay.
And so then I thought, well, that would be good actually to have dedicated program of this kind of soothing music. If you talk about ambient music, that's just one of the terms we use. We can say relaxation music. In those days, some people would even call it new age music. Well, none of those terms is actually reflecting exactly what it is. But we understand what kind of music it is. The emphasis was on relaxation. And or sometimes I would call it meditative music. And when the opportunity came, I had a chat with my boss, Dennis Harrison, then, and eventually I convinced him that it would be good to have a dedicated program of this kind of music. And at the same time, that was really the beginning of this new age movement, so new recordings were appearing. And I said, well, here we have something, this new music which we can present within this context. And that's how it happened.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And so Dreamtime went to air on ABC FM from, I believe it began in 1984 and concluded somewhere around 1992. So that's quite a span of years for a program and such a benchmark program to be running. Now, would you mind sharing with our audience and with myself what were some of the highlights and some of your fondest memories from the Dreamtime years?
Well, Dreamtime became a very popular program. Of course, music was quite accessible. There were a few things I was very happy with. That program brought many younger listeners to our station, because we know that with classical music station, well, that's what ABC FM basically was. We usually have older audience, and I was very keen on introducing younger listeners also to the rich and beautiful music. And I didn't play just, let's say, new age music or ambient music. I would often make mix where I would put classical music in the musical flow. So, yes, I think that was a program which had significantly high proportion of young audiences. Then I got some lovely feedback. Well, you get it because, let's be honest about it. If you play classical music, most listeners basically know the music. They can even buy CDs if they want to. When you do some new music, and this ambient music was new, often I would get CDs direct from composers or musicians. So people needed some information and they had to ring or they had to write to ask about the details and where to get it from.
So what were some of the pieces of feedback, letters, comments which really stood out for you from those years?
Well, some listeners would admit that yes, this was a kind of program where they might fall asleep during the program, which I said, look, I don't mind. There's so many people who spend so much money on sleeping pills. So if you can prove it, perhaps I could become even very rich by putting people into deep, nice, relaxed sleep. Because even if you fall asleep, you still listen. And the important thing is that it's a very sound, deep, healthy sleep. So that was no problem at all. But yeah, there were some very interesting comments I had and feedback. Once I got a letter from Europe that this listener wrote to me that he was traveling across Asia and that he was missing my program. And but he met another backpacker somewhere in India who had a few tapes, a few copies of Dreamtime, so he stayed with him for about a whole week so that he could listen to his tapes. That was a lovely compliment. Another very interesting story was when I was visited in Adelaide by a chap who said that he would like to meet me and have a chat with me because he listened to my program at Antarctica. I said, well, that's...
Well, you must have had a powerful transmitter.
Yeah, I said, it's impossible, technically. He said, no, 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 and explain how it happened. He said that from their base in Tasmania, they got, I think, once a week, a plane would drop supplies, and they made an arrangement that someone in Hobart would record Dreamtime for them, and the tape, the cassette, was then dropped without supplies, and they had the working FM transmitter for communication. So usually they were not communicating. They said very often they played my tapes.
Fantastic. So your program has in many forms traveled all around the world.
Yes, yes. But as I said earlier, for me the greatest thing was that I could see that it was working for people, that I was doing something which was meaningful. Because in media, especially in modern time, you know, the fame is always short-lived, and one needs to be a little bit extrovert, but not too much. To me, the success, especially in radio, is really thinking about your listener,
Absolutely.
Or your listeners.
Absolutely.
And sharing, doing something for them. After all, that was the job we were paid for. But that was very important, so all this feedback was good for me when it was confirming that my approach and my strategies were working.
Yeah, that aspect of sharing the music is very much something I can relate to. Not sure how many of the Ultima Thule listeners are actually aware, but it's got its home in a radio station called 2MBS, which is in Sydney. It's a community-based radio station where all but, I think you could count on one hand how many people at the station were actually paid, but certainly with the Ultima Thule team, we're all doing this as an act of love. It's totally voluntary, and the only reason we're here is because we love to share this music with people. So we do like to get those emails and occasionally letters or phone calls from people just to have a bit of feedback about what's going on. But I can appreciate these stories.
But it's great. I actually like, you know, I like amateurs. Some of them are professional, some of them are not. Amateur is a person who does something for the love of it.
Absolutely.
And if they truly love it, they try to do their best. I'm not very keen on dilettantes. Dilettantes are people who often get paid for it too, but they just don't know enough about it. So I have a problem with them. But amateurs, volunteers, yes, of course, that's a right approach to it.
Yeah. And something I'd like to move on to, I'm aware that you've been involved in a few music publishing projects and you compose music yourself and create music What have you been up to since Dreamtime? Tell us a little bit about specifically the music publishing projects, because I've had a listen to some of your creations, some of your works, and I've noticed the field recordings that you've actually used. Perhaps it's partly been influenced by the days of your father bringing you on the motorbike up into the mountains and playing with the birds. But I noticed that one of your techniques with creating music is to do the field recordings and incorporate that in. So if you could tell us a little bit about that and tell us a little bit about the overall projects that you've been working on.
Using nature sounds was very important for me for several reasons. I would say perhaps the most important one was a cultural one. You know, all those values which are very important for our life, meaningful life and continuation of life, that's to me is really the very essence of culture. And without culture, we can't properly function as individuals or as society. So culture actually can absorb various elements from other parts of the world, but they have to fit, they have to be meaningful in the context. There's really not much point being very multicultural and accepting Eskimo culture, because it's got really no meaning here in our climate. The same thing is with music. You see, we can easily absorb Bach because his music is universal. So those various aspects of culture are related to our environment, to our needs. And then it really doesn't matter whether I was born in Australia or not. What really matters is how I feel about the place I live in. Whether I'm prepared really to protect it. And to protect it means really to appreciate it. And to appreciate it means to know it. So let's say in Australia, if you talk about the so-called white Australia history, well, when I came here, we were still very much under the English influence. I think lately we are getting more and more American input. So what I would prefer to see is that we seriously think about the authentic, uniquely Australian aspect of culture. And when we talk about music, well, that's why I made recommendations to all those young and talented composers of ambient music to go out and listen and record. And first listen so that we can hear the uniquely Australian sounds around us. See, we are a very urban nation. I think more than 70% of Australians live in the big cities. And yet, we live on this lovely continent, so listening to sounds, not just birds, even to ocean sounds and whatever, give us a certain cue how to develop our uniquely Australian culture. So that's what it was all about.
So what I can hear there is the deepening into a sense of place, a grounding into this place called Australia, and really getting in touch with what it means, what it feels like, what it looks like, what it sounds like in Australia, and using that as an information base, an experiential information base, to then inspire the music, would allow an Australian music to emerge. There'd be elements of the Australian landscape, this place, this country, this land, to actually be expressed through the music.
Yes, well, music is a fine example of all things cultural. Now, certain music, yes, we can incorporate, we can accept. But what's the point for me bringing Czech culture, and it's a very rich culture with deep traditions, into Australia? Because that culture developed in specific environment. So here, I was thinking, okay, what is truly Australian? I had to learn many things. I had to learn really to love the bush. And how could I do it? Well, through my ears. Listening to birds, listening to night crickets, all those things. And that really opened my ear and opened my heart as well. So in this way, sound and nature sound was sort of very important for me. And I think in ambient music, we've reached some sort of specific qualities. Because if you listen to so-called art music now, with perhaps a great exception, which is Peter Scarthorpe, whose music sounds really very Australian, because he listened. He was born in Tasmania, and from his childhood he would hear the bush. So in his music, you know, that's Australian music. But most other art music could come from anywhere. Pop music, rock music. There's nothing specifically Australian about it usually. Just the touch of didgeridoo that could come from Germany or American groups as well. But in ambient music, we have now a group of very talented young composers. Unfortunately, there are not enough programs for us to hear their music. I could give a number of names. Of course, Tony O'Connor would be the best known to me. Really, one of the great Australian composers is Peter Mamey, who is not well known, but he's done some brilliant recordings of Australian sounds. He's got very Australian, fine, cultivated ear, and his music is quite joyful, but the way he combines Australian nature sounds and music is quite unique. It's beautiful music, very talented.
If our listeners would like to go out and source some of this music, do you have a favourite album that you would recommend they start with?
I think Goran Derek is perhaps his best known album.
Okay, how do you spell that?
CORANDERK, I think it is.
Okay.
Goran Derek.
And how do you spell Peter's surname?
MUMME, Peter Mamme. I think he's quite exceptional. APRA did some support for ambient music, I'm very happy to say. There is even a section where ambient composers or ambient music composers get returns based on sales, because, you see, this music unfortunately is not played on commercial radio or not even on the ABC anymore. I can understand why. There were plenty of listeners and certainly demand was there. It just showed about the narrow-mindedness of artistic managers, unfortunately. But yes, there is a very rich school, and I hope that one day they will be properly recognized and their music would be enjoyed. Many people would love to hear the music and use it if they only knew about it. That's the problem.
And so, still talking about the production and the music projects, what were some of the areas that you went to, some of the places that you went to do the field recordings, and what were some of your favourite things to record?
Well, I kept a tape recorder, later mini disc, and a good microphone with me all the time. Whenever I heard some interesting sounds, I would record them. I think two localities were of particular significance. One was Tasmania, which has a lovely soundscapes, beautiful sounds. But once you start recording, a very interesting thing happens. Because to record very subtle nature sounds, one has to open one's ear. And that's amazing. Because then you realize how badly is our world polluted sonically. So I said, no, I want to record some pure nature sounds. I don't want any background, somebody cutting grass on Sunday morning, anything like that, no traffic. So one day I thought, okay, I go for a week to record sounds, pure sounds, deep in the outback. And the idea was to go to the Flinders Ranges. So I went to the Flinders Ranges, and I could hear on my recordings in the background noise of buses and trucks being 20 miles away. I said, well, no, I don't want that. So I went to Arkarula. Now,
where is Arkarula?
Arkarula is further, nearly 100 kilometers northeast of the Flinders Ranges.
Okay, and for the non-Australian listeners, the Flinders Ranges is just north of Adelaide, so we're talking a region below Ayers Rock, below Uluru.
Oh, yes.
Just below Central Australia. Yeah. That part of Australia is where Yaroslav is referring to.
Yeah. And Akarula is very sort of pure nature there, everything fine. But recording, of course, especially birds' choruses are recorded, best recorded early in the morning. So I would get up at 4:30, get everything ready, would walk somewhere, start the recording, and I could hear generators running. I said, it's not good enough. So I hit the track and went deep into the outback to Inaminka. Even Inaminka was noisy. So eventually I ended at Kungi Lakes. Not many people ever visited Kungi Lakes. It was opened only some years ago. If you look at the map, that's really northeast corner of South Australia. And we are talking now about, you know, being hundreds of kilometers away from any technical or technological civilization. It's in the middle desert, part of the Cooper's Creek system, and there are a few lakes where even birds, I could actually hear that they were not really influenced by our technological noisy society. You can tell them from their singing. So, yes, I spent a few days there and did all sorts of recordings. So these were very, very, very precious sound recordings. And very enjoyable too. But as I've said, it is actually very interesting that only when you start recording and you want to have really good quality sound, then you open your ear and you realize that there are so many noises around us. It's hard to escape them.
Absolutely. It sounds comparable to the eye of the artist, the visual artist or the photographer. And when a person develops that appreciation of the visual world through that artistic representation, then wherever they walk, it's like their eyes are open and it's almost like they see, they really start to see for the first time. So in a way, what I'm hearing you saying is this process of recording really helped to open and deepen your listening and your hearing.
That's a very interesting aspect of it, that visual and audible world. I went, for example, to Uluru to do some recordings there. Now in Central Australia, and I actually went then to Alice Springs to live there and work there for a whole year because I found it a very fascinating world. But if you look in the bush and said, well, that's been here for centuries like that, you know, you can't see any influence of our sort of modern society. So visually, we can escape that. We can see certain sceneries which are really pure and ancient. But when it comes to sound, you can't escape it because you hear buses, cars, airplanes, at night generators. That's how we are. And I think in modern times, we are losing sensitivity to our sonic environment. And that's why ambient music also has a role, just to make us aware of the sonic ambience which we live in. You see, if you walk through a city, we get so much sonic garbage around us, but now it seems that most people simply don't care much about it. If it's visual, you know, people complain, and rightly so, about graffiti on walls and public buildings, and but we should complain also about sonic graffiti, which are much worse, attacking us with noise, ugly music. Why we lost the sensitivity to sound, hard to explain.
Yeah, it's a very important area of work that I believe will be addressed. It'll have to be addressed because we have so many stresses in our society, in this modern, busy, highly concentrated lifestyle that we live, that, you know, one by one they are getting addressed in the sonic world. Sonic stress is certainly something which has been proven to be capable of producing disease, dis-ease.
Yes,
so ambient music is something which helps to create relief and to create ease. So music functionality, functional music, is something I know you're passionate about. Now, would you like to share a little bit about the projects, the musical production and composition projects that you've been involved in with functional music? What are you quite passionate about at the moment and involved in?
Well, yes, I also do. I compose music, but after Bach and Mozart and all the great composers, I wouldn't even dream about trying to produce some art music, because certainly we've got some great music by those masters, and they are never-ending inspiration. But music can have many functions. And so I was looking in the areas where there may be need, and this meditative music is one area where, yes, certain work can be done. After I left the ABC 10 years ago, I continued sort of my search in the area of music psychology, music therapy, and
this is sort of 1992-93, so the New Age movement was rolling along quite strongly at that era. So meditation music, New Age music, all this was quite a strong, there was quite a strong appetite and uptake in the community for these sounds and this functionality of music.
Once again, the term New Age is a bit tricky, isn't it? Because people can imagine all sorts of things, and I know there are so many charlatans who pretend all sorts of things, you know, singing with angels and stuff like that. But I'm not afraid of the expression New Age. Basically meant that there was some fresh air, and in the early days there was a lot of inspiration coming from the East, in Buddhist philosophy, Hindu, Taoism, Zen, things like that. All that was, I think, very useful.
And tribal cultures as well. I'd like to acknowledge the wisdom that has very much emerged from the First Nations peoples, the indigenous peoples of the world, who have such a strong connection to the land.
That's right, yes. And I think that was very important and very useful. But still, I'm a combination of both sort of Eastern mysticism and the Western rational approach. Background, we can't help it.
I think that's one of the biggest lessons that came out of the New Age era, was the balancing, the bringing into balance of the Western technology, contemporary aspects, and also the more ancient intuitive wisdoms, just finding the happy marriage of both. So it sounds like this is a little bit about, am I preempting you here in suggesting that this is what you perhaps have incorporated into your creation of music, a bit
yes,
of both.
Yes, yes. And also the area of researching how sound affects musical sound in particular, both our sort of psychological side and even physiological side. And then I developed the technique of toning meditation. That's very interesting, because it's a kind of style of meditation designed for modern day living, and 15 minutes of toning is quite effective. And so I moved into that area where with toning and producing of harmonic sounds we can help to control our stress, or even create sort of healing situations with toning. And use of music, for example, can help reducing hypertension, high blood pressure.
Blood pressure, yeah.
And there'll be a number of many other things which we can use. Unfortunately, we live in the world where we are conditioned by advertising media and profit-seeking organizations in that field, in particular. Pharmaceutical companies, and they present us just this notion that really, you know, we give you a pill and you'll be happy. It would be nice if it would work like that, but every pill would have its side effects, and reaching inner peace and wellness and happiness, it simply takes time and it has to be developed. So if we can do it in a natural way, using our voice, using good music, it's not only safer, it's more beneficial, because there are no side effects, no problems. But it, of course, takes motivation and a little bit of work, that's all.
And there's, of course, the rewards of empowerment that come with that. Whenever you work and then you achieve something, there's this sense of personal power that you develop.
Well, especially meditation, if it's done properly and practiced properly, it helps us to get better control over our own life. And that means, yes, we can make our life more meaningful and thus a lot more enjoyable. And that's what is it all about, to enjoy our life. I mean, it's never too long, so it's a pity to lose any minute of it. And once again, proper understanding and use of music can be very beneficial. Music is more than just a pastime. Now, it's a very, very important dimension of people's life.
Well, and look, we're certainly witnessing that in the, especially the contemporary world around us. Never has there been such easy access and such a rapid and intense uptake of music as we're now witnessing, with what proportion of households now own an MP3 player. Everywhere you go, people are listening to music. So we're very much living in a world that is quite intensely participating in the music realm.
Yes, that's right. We have access now to such a great variety, such a wide spectrum of musical styles, musical sounds. Yet, interesting question would be to find out how much of that is used by the majority of people. Sometimes I have opportunity. I like doing workshops or lectures with for young people, and I'm surprised that many of them, especially young boys, all they know from music is just techno music. And I said, tell them, that's you. You have to be in control of your life. And because for them, noise presents power. But what they don't realize is that when they hit middle age, their hearing will be so badly damaged that there is no return. They will not be able to fix it. And that's a serious problem. It's a worldwide problem.
And something that could be helpful to just touch on a little bit more is about the specifics of the musical projects that you have been involved in since Dreamtime. If I could just bring the conversation back to that. So, for example, if some of our listeners wanted to explore some of what you've been up to, how would you like to introduce that?
Well, after I left the ABC, we started with a very good friend of mine, also a composer, Alex Svensis, company, Terra Australia.
And Terra Australia.
We produced over, 32 albums plus. But of course, since Dreamtime was gone, there was no program which would promote the music or give people chance to hear that kind of music. So it's very difficult to sell music people don't know if you don't have a really lot of money for promoting. And that's where you can't really beat those huge companies who made billion-dollar profits and so on. So we have produced quite a number of albums, all of Australian music, of course. But that was the end of it, because if you don't have programs, if you don't have promotional vehicles, so with a great regret, then we realized, okay, we can't do more. I then produced music which is good for massage, for yoga, that's flowing harmonies. Then I went into, as I've said, meditative music, functional music, healing music, toning meditation. Also have album Energizing Tones, because it was Dr. Alfred Tomatis, French specialist, who formulated the law, actually, that high frequencies help to energize our brain. So if we're tired and we listen to high frequencies, we might get some energy back. So what we have, if you produce a CD album, is, you know, we have certain limits because of sampling rate, so we can't go to 27,000, anything like that. But most people wouldn't hear above
15K
maybe,
if lucky. These days, yeah. They say 20,000 hertz is the upper limit of our hearing, but I have read some studies which suggest that, especially, and talking about the noise pollution that we live in this modern world, due to that most people's hearing tapers out somewhere around about the 15,000 hertz mark.
And it's actually low frequencies which drain energy from us, so people don't realize it may be even very soft, like the sound of air conditioning in the office.
The refrigerator humming.
Yeah, even distant traffic noise, which is very low frequencies. People living close to airports or highways, often they feel that they are very tired, exhausted, not knowing why. And that's a sonic world, and it doesn't even have to be loud. But high frequencies just do the reverse. So I had album energizing tones, energizing harmonies, and these are just tones, that's not music. But if you listen it so softly, it also helps to somehow, I shouldn't say restore, but because it massages, you know, cochlea, and
so that's the inner part of the ear.
Yeah, helps to keep our hearing in better shape. So I do all sorts of experiments in this area. I also I did some experiments with plants, you know, playing all sorts of music just to check what those vibrations, how they operate, what they do. Because for me, it is quite important that in this field, if I do anything, I need to know it works, how it works. Even if I can't explain it sometimes, at least the proof that it works is important. And one perhaps more interesting project of mine was, perhaps I am the first composer in the history, or as far as I know, a composer of music for dogs.
Dogs. Yeah, that's interesting. It's a bit different. Music for dogs.
Yes, I love dogs very much. I'm the greatest lover of dogs in the world. And
well, they're probably the animal closest in companionship to humans. You know, a lot of dog lovers out there.
And are they musical, dogs too?
Musical. So, dogs are musical. Okay, tell us more about that.
Well, I actually. We always had dogs in our family, and so I had first-hand experience that when we played, the dog, one dog in particular, would sit with us, and he would truly sing. By that I mean that they tried to get the right pitch, second harmony. And then I met a number of dogs who could do that. And dogs are very sensitive to sounds because they've got much better hearing than we have. And they truly prefer harmonious music rather than noisy music. Even my postman explained to me, he was a great dog lover, and he said, well, that sometimes dogs are chasing postman. This is well known. And he said, no, they've got nothing against me. They just don't like the sound of my motorbike, and they're right. I don't like it myself either. So he would stop. He would switch his motorbike off, and then he would have a chat with our dog or dogs in our street, and they would love him. They stopped barking at him because they knew it was just a stupid motorbike, and he explained to them. So dogs can hear pretty well. They've got very good sonic memory. You know, once they hear the sound of your car, then they know when you're coming home, and they remember voices. So I thought, well, it's about time that we produce some music for them. The album actually is designed for situations where dogs are left alone in a house or in a flat.
Okay, because, I mean, often dogs are left alone for long periods when they become agitated or stressed or bored. I've noticed that they begin to bark a lot.
That's right, because they are social animals, and when they get bored, lonely, they feel miserable and they start barking or complaining. So the album has three elements of my relaxation music, nature sounds, because often they are in a flat where they can hear only technical sounds. And there is some dog singing, not much, but yes, it is there. I worked with five dogs on that one. Bruno, I think, was the best of them. Some dogs would actually bark on hearing it for the first time, and people then would say, now look, this is supposed to be a relaxation music for dogs. And my dog was barking when hearing it, listening to it. I said, well, it's similar to the situation when you have a new neighbor and he comes with his dog. So what your dog will do, at first they will bark at each other because it's a new dog in this space. but it usually doesn't take long. They become friends and then they work together, and yeah, dogs actually can create very, very strong and good friendship. So the same thing is here, that for the first time they hear it, some of them might bark, but maybe after second, third hearing, those dogs, they recognize the voice, and then they become their friends. So
companions.
If a mere master goes out, it shouldn't be played too loud. It's very soft on, let's say, repeat or random mode. And the dogs is quite happy because they do listen. They hear nature sounds, calming music, and a little bit of dog sort of barking and singing. It's just, yeah, that keeps them company. Now, it's been tested. It worked quite well, even tested by some animal psychologists. But, of course, people need to understand how to use it.
Fantastic. Well, fascinating. So if anybody out there listening wanted to explore some of your works, whether they be your more sort of musical recordings post-Dreamtime or this composition for dogs, which I believe is called Barcarolle, where could they access your music?
Well, actually, at the moment, I don't have any distribution network because I relocated from South Australia onto the eastern coast. So when it comes to promoting or selling my music, I'll be looking for someone interested in distribution network.
Okay, so would you prefer listeners to contact Ultima Thule, or would you like to give out your email address? How would you...
Well, if dating maps may be easier, if you don't mind, if they contact you, my email address is very simple, Jarokova, Jarokova, @yahoo.com. Jarokova, Jarokova.
Sure, and no doubt some of the Australian audience will remember Yaroslav's program quite fondly and may have some other questions or comments or feedback they'd like to offer. So I'd like to thank you very much, Yaroslav, for coming in and spending this time.
Oh, it was a real pleasure.
And also our listeners a show or two ago of mine would have been treated to the program, which was entirely produced from CDs from your own private collection, which you very generously shared with myself. So that would also give them a little bit of a reminder of Yaroslav's sounds. So thank you, Yaroslav.
And thank you very much for listening. One thing I would like to mention is that if you listen to this program regularly, you like it, then please recommend it to your friends, because programs like that usually don't have huge resources for promotion. So while commercial music gets all sorts of promotion here, it is important that we do it ourselves. But I know from my experience that if you find the right person who might enjoy this kind of program, then of course they are quite happy if it's brought to their attention. So please give it a good support. Programs of this kind, I think, are truly important.
Fantastic. Yeah, look, that's wonderful that you emphasize that point. We do certainly appreciate listeners helping to spread the word about what we're sharing here, because that's what it's all about, sharing something which takes people on a beautiful journey and helps to make their lives more peaceful and reduce stress. So, yes, it's an absolute pleasure to be sharing this and to have you here.
Well, thank you very much again.
Thank you, Yaroslav.
May you be always well and happy. May you be always well and happy. May you be always well and happy. 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 And happy.